From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. On today's show, we get to meet Indianapolis's first film commissioner and meet a southern Indiana family that sent 33 fathers and sons, brothers and cousins to fight in the Civil War. We'll also share a few holiday activities you can plan with your family. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, we have holiday celebrations around town to take your family to, and we'll learn about a new book chronicling a Scott County family's extraordinary service in the Civil War. First, though, have you ever wondered how a city positions itself as a great place for filmmakers to shoot their work? In July, Teresa Sabatine was hired to be the City of Indianapolis's first film commissioner, and for the next 2 years, at least, she's responsible for positioning the city as a production-friendly location for video and film projects. Sabatine was hired as part of a public-private partnership launched by Visit Indy, the Indy Chamber, the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and the City of Indianapolis. The hope is to generate more than $6 million in annual economic impact. Our contributor Mark Allen talked to Sabatine about her plans to make Indianapolis a destination for filmmakers.
So I'm A.G. Pennypacker, a well-known and wealthy movie producer looking to make my next film somewhere outside of Hollywood. What do you say to convince me to come to Indianapolis?
It depends on what year it is. If it's right now, I say, you know, our affordability is unlike anywhere else in the nation. We have award-winning crew, Emmy award-winning crew, and just an ability to really get around our city. You can be in an urban city downtown into a farm in 15 minutes. Thousands of locations that are really untapped. Not a lot of people have taken the opportunity to film in Indianapolis or in central Indiana. And so you really have some untapped beauty. And we're just really nice, you know. We're friendly. It's a concierge service. You call my number, and I'm the person that deals with you the entire time. Our city is ready. We're excited to host filmmakers. So you're really going to get the rock star treatment if you come to Indianapolis. And, yeah, I think that that's the start of the conversation, right?
Okay. Yeah. And I know that this is true because I have your cell phone number and I
right.
called you and you answered it. So
yes.
It's good.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we've gotten through the fantasy scenario. Now, how does the process actually work? How do you attract film projects here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, tax incentives are a huge part of that business, particularly. So you're looking at different states that offer different incentives for productions to come to town. You know, you'll see that Atlanta, Georgia has really blown up right now. Marvel Studios has moved into town and they opened up shop and they're filming all of their movies there. You've got Pennsylvania with really great incentives. And so, you know, The Dark Knight was shot in Pittsburgh and they've got three TV series. Similar in Illinois with their incentives in the Chicago market. Dick Wolf moving his production company there. So that's a big part of the game. We're working on a bill that will go to the State House in January. It's authored by both a Republican and a Democrat, just to give us a little bit of incentive. And if that passes, that the phone will ring a lot more. But for now, without that, you know, part of my job is lobbying for those and talking to people and really getting people excited about the opportunity to bring filmmakers here, but also have the kind of incentive that can make our filmmakers make better projects more affordably. But in reality, I'm out in the markets in New York, in Los Angeles, really talking to industry professionals and saying, hey, we're here. I don't know if you ever thought about us as a location. I don't know if you ever thought about stopping in Indiana, but I just want to let you know that I'm representing this city. Here's what we have to offer. Give me a call if you're interested. The other aspect is Googling the TV shows that are on or watching TV and getting some inspiration on what shows could actually come to Indianapolis and showcase our city, whether that's a travel show, a Food Network show. You know, the Cooking Channel was here last week with Cheap Eats, and so they went, I think, to 6 or 7 different restaurants around the city, and they're showcasing our food and our city, and they're doing B-roll on the canal, and they're really, you know, making us look beautiful in the market. So one aspect is, you know, helping those filmmakers when they come to town, but also trying to get them here. And then the other aspect is trying to meet everybody in town. Who's making things? Who wants to make things? What have they done? What are they looking to do? How can I support them as a film commissioner and either give them advice on how to get their projects done or make those projects happen so stuff's coming out of central Indiana?
The state doesn't have a great history of giving tax breaks and offering incentives. So how can you break the logjam, you think?
You know, we're trying to talk about it differently. We're trying to, I think this particular bill, and I'm not the expert on it, but I've been with it for a couple months now. You know, it showcases incentives on student labor. So we're really incentivizing using our student labor and really helping that talent gain experience, which we think might be a better talking point. It's an education talking point. It's really focusing on getting into that. So we feel like that's an incentive for the legislation to think about the future of our constituency. And also trying to keep that talent here. And so those are kind of the talking points, keeping our talent here. We also have a lot of corporations that take their marketing dollars outside of the state of Indiana. How can we keep those marketing dollars here, give them an incentive to shoot their commercials in town?
Okay. So you've been in the job 4 months
now? 4 months.
Okay. So, and I say this with a smile on my face, what have you done for us lately?
For Central Indiana, I think that I've created a cohesive conversation around film. I think I've kind of lit it up a little bit. More people are talking about it. More people are thinking about it. I think I've met with a lot of filmmakers, and I've educated a few of them on how to sell their films, on how to develop their films, what they should be thinking about, what the possibilities are for them. I just met with a documentarian, I think yesterday or the day before, and I'm going to connect her to 2 producers out in the market that she can talk to and get advice from. So that's what I'm doing on a local level. And on a national level, I've been to both New York and LA in the 4 months that I've been in the job, and I've met with probably 25 to 30 producers, some in the reality space, some in the independent film space, some in the big motion picture. I was at Lionsgate last week, and they said, those incentives come, we'll be there. So it's really laying the groundwork to say, like, hey, we're up there. Hey, we're doing this. If these incentives go, we've already got 10 to 20 producers that are willing to come to town, and they want to talk. And then, you know, today I was on the phone with a really extraordinary sound engineer who did Dallas Buyers Club, and he's located in Carmel, Indiana. So him and I are talking about how do we use his connections and his experience and his enthusiasm to make more projects here. And so just really getting everybody together to talk about it has been the biggest thing, I think.
Okay. I've got 2 questions for you, but let's talk about, you founded something called the Jump Network, and I think we should talk a little bit about that in addition to your film work. So
yeah.
Tell us about that.
You know, in Hollywood, I was a lot of times the only woman in the room, the only woman at the table. And there weren't a lot of women doing what I wanted to do. And it was hard to see if that was going to be possible for me. It was hard to ask them questions. And, you know, I think women lead with a lot of empathy. And that's just what we do. And that might be different than how men lead. And so I didn't have a lot of examples of how to utilize my strong empathy and care and guidance to really make a career for myself. And I started helping young women. They would write me, they would email me, they'd ask me how I would do it, and I wished I could clone myself and have 1,000 conversations a day. And I realized I'd actually made a lot of incredible female friends in the world, not only in Hollywood, but in a lot of other different industries. And so I decided to start a network where those women were willing to show up for the other women and help them out. And so you can join our network as a young woman or an older woman or a middle-aged woman, and you can say, I want to talk to a TV producer and see what that job's like and ask her questions, and she'll give you 30 minutes of her time for free.
Nice. Last question I want to ask you is, you have a 2-year deal to be the film commissioner.
Yeah.
If everything goes as planned, what's Indianapolis going to look like as a film city in 2018?
Well, we'll have tax incentives. So I think people will be working a lot more than they ever have. I think students will be sticking around and taking advantage of those new jobs in that lucrative industry. I think we would have some of our film programs really growing and offering maybe some classes that they don't offer right now, a lot of training for like actual tactical skilled training. I think we'd have some projects coming out of here that could make us really proud. Some TV shows that are highlighting our city nationally, you know, similar to American Ninja Warrior. And I just think that everyone would be really excited and around this, and we would have a reputation for somewhere you can go to do creative work.
Contributor Mark Allen with Indianapolis Film Commissioner Teresa Sabatine. To quote a happy song, whatever your faith, we need a little Christmas right now. I invited Actors Theater of Indiana's Don Farrell in to learn how he and his co-creator, Mary Jane Waddell, mined their own family traditions to create completely Christmas cabaret, memories, mistletoe, and manger included.
So Completely Christmas, this is a format that you've evolved over a couple or three seasons, right?
Actually, we had our premiere of it last year.
Okay.
It was sold out, two performances at
Wow.
the Warehouse in Carmel. It was great. Mary Jane Waddell and I have been talking about doing some cabaret together, and we came up with the, you know, let's tell our story of growing up. So it's very, it's not only just songs that everybody's going to, there's a lot of favorites that are in there, but
mm-hmm.
there's also a lot of new contemporary Christmas songs that we've been finding and searching out.
Really?
And they are hysterical, but I can't give them away because you want to find out what it's all about. But it was such a big hit last year, we decided to bring it back, and we're doing it at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts this year, and we're converting it into a cabaret space. So it'll still be the thrust seating that, mm-hmm. that our patrons have come to enjoy and appreciate, but also we're adding in cafe tables, so we'll have four tops as well.
Oh.
So you will have the true cabaret experience
yeah.
that'll be in there, and it's going to be
your little libation.
You have your libation, maybe a couple little nosh stuff on the table because you pay just a wee bit more for those tables.
You expect to do that at this time of year.
Yes, and it's great for the, you know, not only to hear the songs that we all know and love, but also to hear some new songs, and also to hear it's about Mary Jane Waddell's, her upbringing.
Which was where? Tell me.
It was in Rochester, New York.
Okay.
Fairport, New York, just to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
The Erie Canal, all of the, I mean, it's beautiful up there. Of course, you got the lake and
a lot of snow.
You get that lake effect. It's crazy.
Maybe it's cold outside.
Oh, yes. And so she comes from that background of growing up there. I grew up in the South, down just north of Atlanta, Georgia, in Roswell, Georgia. And so we have this comparison between what her dreams are of Christmas and my dreams are, and then our own personal stories growing up. And it's fun. It's a lot
of
fun.
So as a kid who grew up around music and musical theater, did you, you know, there was not snow where you grew up.
No, exactly.
So did you, what did you do when
I pined for snow. I wanted snow.
Of course you did,
yeah. So when I came here to Indiana, that's one of the things I love about Indianapolis and Indiana is that it is true to all of the seasons. So I get a fall, I get a spring, I get a summer, and I get a great winter as well. Hopefully it won't be too crazy of a winter this year, but I do get a white Christmas. I grew up never having a white Christmas. So those Norman Rockwell paintings just seem something unattainable for me personally
growing
up.
Really had to use your imagination, didn't
you? I did. And growing up in the South, you know, they didn't have the infrastructure to take care of. So when we did get snow, I remember as a kid, I remember watching the news. We were so thrilled we didn't have school. But, you know, you're watching TV, and they did a thing on the news where it's 400 is a main thoroughfare from the northern suburbs down, going down to Atlanta. And they showed on the news there was a plow on the front of a truck, but it was angled. So as it's heading north, it's angled and shoving all the snow onto the southbound lane. And as we say in the South, oh, bless their hearts.
That's the first hint of an accent I've heard. Did you have an accent growing up? And
I did.
Did you leave it behind to do theater?
I did. And the more tired I get, or the more sometimes when I'm enjoying a glass of wine or two, you might hear that a little bit. And definitely when I speak to my folks on the phone.
You still have family down there.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And when you go home for a visit.
Absolutely.
And you come back,
and then
your
there's
friends
a transition.
Say, hey, like, what happened to you?
You've been in the South, haven't you? I'm like, yeah. But my freshman year in college, I went to University of Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, CCM.
Great school.
And thank you. Yeah, it was very good, good training. And first day of acting class, we all sat around in a circle, introduced ourselves, where we're from. And when hi, my name is Don Farrell. I'm from Georgia. And there, my teacher is like, oh, Don, we are going to need to work on that. I can always draw on it. I was able, Million Dollar Quartet, our previous show.
Yeah.
I got to play Sam Phillips and from Memphis, Tennessee, and I really got to, and he has a wonderful accent if you listen to Sam Phillips. So I was able to tap back into my roots.
But still a challenge because Georgia accent, Tennessee accent.
It is different.
Different.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
You had a vocal coach?
I was really myself, my own. I just listened, YouTube's amazing, right? And
yeah.
There was a great a documentary, Sam Phillips, the man who invented rock and roll. And I just listened, and of course he was being interviewed. So I would just listen to his phrasing. It's very, you know, the South has such a melodious flow to it, and the vowels are elongated, and it's almost like we like to hear our own voice and talking, and everything is we take our time. So that was fun. That was fun to work on.
Will you go back to your growing up accent for this cabaret show?
Some of the storytelling. There's a couple of little moments here and there. Yeah.
What's your favorite moment of the show?
You know, my favorite moment of the show is I'm a sucker for nostalgia. The stories, we all have them. Everybody has memories. That's what life is, you know, and that's one of the beautiful things that part of my stump speech about theater is it's memories. Theater is creating memories. Even when you go to see a show, it's not going to be like you could go see the same show the next night. It's a completely different experience. It's my own little science lab. So one of the things I love about this show, Completely Christmas, is the personal tales that Mary Jane and I have bringing up. That's what cabaret is getting to know. I mean, there's a lot of different types of cabaret. You can do cabaret that's about, you know, we're going to do a songbook series about an artist or something and how those songs apply to me. But,
sure.
But, and it's always about bringing the personal aspect of that artist to let the audience know a little bit about them that they don't know. And so there's a lot of stories that we share, both Mary Jane and myself, and a lot of things that we can all relate to. I mean, we can remember those toys that everybody wanted growing up, and she had her favorite toy. I had mine. The foods that the traditions that are involved, and so there was that, and then we mix it up with some other fun things that I'm not going to give away.
I wish you could see the expression on this man's face.
You have to just experience
it. He's gleeful and a little blushing at the same time.
It is fun. It is a lot of fun.
Visit with Mary Jane Waddell and try to catch Don Farrell reverting to his childhood accent in Completely Christmas Cabaret, Memories, Mistletoe, and Manger. December 8th through the 10th at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts. Find out more at atistage.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, Die Hard in a Holiday Film Festival? But first, it's time for Eat, Drink, Indie. One layer of Valrhona chocolate between two layers of pumpkin spice cake filled with cream cheese with homemade salted caramel and dark chocolate fudge frosting. Six layers of buttermilk cake brushed with Madagascar vanilla beans, simple syrup, topped with homemade brown sugar caramel cream. If this sounds like your kind of menu, listen up. This week, Jolene Ketzenberger talks with the cake bake shop's owner, Gwendolyn Rogers, about tapping into our city's collective sweet tooth.
Tell me what the vision was for Cake Bake Shop.
Well, when I first started, my vision was just to really be like I said before, to make an extension of my home, and it would be a place where people could come in and I could be making the recipes that I've been making for over 30 years. But now I just get to share it with a wider audience. And that was originally my vision. I just wanted it to be really beautiful. I wanted it to be a place where you could come and eat a dessert and have a glass of wine or champagne and not feel like you had to sit in your car. That's how I started when I would go to Taylor's. I would buy a little donut hole and I'd sit in my car and I'd eat them. And I'm like, I'm not a closet eater, but I don't have a place to go. And so I wanted to make a place for people to come, you know, that would have a fireplace and it would be warm and cozy and inviting. And you'd want to come and hang out with your friends.
Now, you must be always thinking about the shop and new items and new things to make. I'm sure that that's constantly going through your head.
Always going through my mind. We change our menu every 3 months. So every 3 month period, we will rotate all of our cake flavors for the season. I have certain cakes that I used to take off the menu, but when I would take them off, people would get really upset. So they're like, that's my favorite cake. You can't take that off the menu. So now we have 7 cakes constantly that we always have. And then I rotate 5 more cakes every couple of months. So right now we have our caramel popcorn cake. We have all of our fall items. We have our pumpkin ginger cake. So in December, on the 1st, we're going to switch it over to chocolate peppermint and all kinds of yummy holiday treats. Well, our eggnog cheesecake that we bring out. We have a beautiful coconut cake that we make for Christmas. So it's nice because it keeps it interesting and it keeps it changing so that you always want to come back.
Well, now tell me a little bit about some other personalities who've discovered your cakes.
Lately, my biggest thing, well, Matt Damon is a fan now, which I think is huge. I've shipped him cakes. He wears my hat. I've got photographs, which is the one thing I have not framed and hung on my wall yet. I'm working on that. But Allison Janney, who is just got nominated for 2 Emmys this year, she's a fantastic actress. I've got her hanging on my wall. I send her cakes for every event. She just got a Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame, and I send her a cake for her family, and she wrote me a beautiful note. So it was kind of being part of that celebration was really exciting. But let's see, who else do I have? Well, Andrew Luck is a big fan, which is great. I have Matt Hasselbeck, who now works for ESPN. He's a big fan. A lot of the Colts players that come in, which is fantastic, and some of the cheerleaders, which is wonderful.
I love the idea of Colts players in your shop because it is such a beautiful, sparkly shop, and to see the Colts players,
big men in here, it's great. And I've got some of the guys from the soccer team, the Indianapolis soccer team, come in. My favorite group, they are not famous, but to me they are. I have 4 guys that come in every single Thursday, and we now call them the Cake Bake Boys. Some of them have tattoos. One guy he's a tattoo artist. One guy's a hairstylist. One guy's a bouncer at a bar, and they're fantastic. I love them. They're my favorite group. So to me, that's my fame is those guys. I love them.
Well, now the Food Network and people connected to that have discovered your wonderful products as well.
Well, that's all because of Mark Summers. And Mark Summers, who I'll never forget the day he walked through my door, I literally dropped what was in my hand. I ran around the corner, and I was like, "You are Mark Summers? Oh, my gosh, what are you doing in my shop?" And I, stuck to him like glue since then. And we've become really good friends, and his mother lives here, so he's actually coming back into town. And every time he comes to the shop. He's been such a huge supporter. He's gotten me on the Chew twice, so we've done that, which has been fun. And he was the one who got Guilty Pleasures to come and film last November.
Now, talk a little bit about the big screen and the movies that your cakes have been involved in.
Well, actually, there's a movie coming out in December that's called Man Down with Shia LaBeouf and Kate Mara and Jai Courtney, and I actually, the cake that's in that, there's a birthday cake scene, and that's my cake. And, of course, it doesn't look like my cake because it was supposed to look like Mom made it. So it looks a little bit different, but it's still a Cake Bake Shop cake. And they were in Dumb and Dumber 2. Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels carry a box throughout the entire film. It's wrapped in brown paper. And that was one of my first cupcake boxes. It was a sample. I only had 4 because it was before I opened. And they carry the box through the whole film. And at the very end, they open it up, and it's 4 of my cupcakes. And Jim Carrey makes a funny comment about what he ate and what he didn't eat. It's cute.
Now, you've also met a lot of musical celebrities. You know, you have Elton John, for example.
John, he was amazing. I actually flew to Paris for a week, and I went to his show front row center 2 nights in a row. I brought him a chocolate cake. It was an incredible experience.
That's from someone reaching out to you, though, right?
It is, and it's because before I opened, I entered a cake competition in London that I never in a million years thought that I would get into. I think over 3,000 people send in inquiries with a photo of a cake, a recipe of a cake, what inspires you, why you think that your cake would be different, and why would we want you to come and make it here on site. 300 people got accepted into that, and out of those 300, there was 30 people that actually were invited to come to the Earl's Court Convention Center in London. I was one of those 30, which I couldn't believe, so I immediately jumped on an airplane. I took my middle son with me at that time. I think he was like 11. And we had a blast, and I stayed at a bed and breakfast there that had a oven and a kitchen, and so I was in their kitchen for 8 hours. There was no mixer. Their oven was all based off Celsius. I could only put 1 cake layer in at a time. I had to make 6 layers because I wanted to make 2 different cakes just in case something happened with one of them. I didn't want to risk it. So I was in that kitchen all day, and the family that owns the house opened up a bottle of French wine, and they stayed in that kitchen with me the entire 8 hours, and that was one of the best experiences of being in that competition. But the fact that I won was just crazy. And Peter Sidwell is the chef that was my judge, and at the time, I was very, you know, my eyes were like deer in headlights. I was like, he's famous, because he's on TV there every day, or every week. He's on that Britain's Best Bakery show. well, now we're really good friends, and he wants to come over and do a show with me here, and he wants me to come to London and do a show in London at some point. When I'm not so busy, then I can go do that. So
now, how awesome is that? And all this happened because you started baking for people.
Mm-hmm. It's just all based off a cake. It's kind of like Walt Disney would say, it all started with a mouse. Well, for me, it all started with a cake. And it's also maintaining the relationships with the people that come into your life. So there are all these things that I've done and places that I've been to. I stay in touch with them, and I keep sending them things. So every time someone would have a birthday, I'll send them a cake just because I want them to know that I'm here and I care and I miss them, and the experience that I had with them when we were together was great. So like with Peter, I mean, we contact each other all the time. And Mark Summers, I just talked to yesterday. So it's keeping the connections, I think, going that with the people that you meet.
Now, do you have any advice for people who might be thinking about this? Because, I mean, honestly, this is sort of, you're kind of living the dream, you know, and you had the idea, you launched the idea, it met with great success, and it's taking you all sorts of places. So any advice for people who might be thinking about something like that, you know? People who, you know, I have this great idea, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think the great ideas are what gets you started and puts you in a place that you feel like where your future is going to go. For me, I feel it at the bottom of my soul that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think that if you follow what that is, you have to really listen to your intuition. So absolutely. I mean, I would 100% tell people, if you have a dream, then follow it, because life is too short. You know, it really is. And if you don't want to look back and say, God, I really wish I would have tried that, or I wish I would have done it, I would rather do it and fail than not to do it at all.
Jolene Katzenberger with Cake Bake Shop's Gwendolyn Rogers. Hear Jolene's Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. A 50-foot-tall Christmas tree built out of plastic outdoor toys like snow saucers, ice carving, fire pits, Arctic animals, and a mansion filled with seasonal decor. Also, movies to share with your sweetie or a friend. Whatever brings holiday joy to your heart, you can probably find a taste of it at the Indianapolis Museum of Art this month. Tariq Robinson, Jonathan Wright, and Stephanie Perry put down their glue guns and poinsettias for long enough to drop by our studios.
So while we hope that people will come to the museum and its campus to look at beautiful art, there is so much else going on during the month of December and winter holidays. I'd like to start with Christmas at Lily House. Jonathan, tell me about Lily House. Remind us when it was built and whether or not you try to do a period-appropriate decor.
Oh, absolutely. So the Lily House was originally built for the Landon family in 1912, and the Lily family purchased the house in the 1930s. So for many, many years, we actually kept the house and all the holiday decorations that people have come to know and love were very period appropriate. So the former curator of the house was incredibly talented in putting together a 1940s Christmas, or, you know, with a very specific design intent. And he would often very well research old photographs and pictures of, you know, eras gone by. And that's not my strong suit. And so what we're doing this year is doing it a little twist. And with the help of our incredibly talented greenhouse team, and by I mean help, I mean they're doing it all. We're going to fill the house this year with unbelievable arrangements of paper whites and amaryllis and poinsettias and cyclamen. And they're going to be citrus trees and displays of herbs and probably a few orchids sprinkled in. The idea being to take the traditional sort of beautiful Christmas decorations that you would maybe expect to see in a house like that, and then amp them up with fresh flowers and fresh greens and fragrance.
Wow, it sounds like a little getaway in the middle of what will be cold weather.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, and Tariq, speaking of getaways, I'm fascinated by the fact that your Teen Arts Council.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You've given them the responsibility of programming.
That's right.
A film festival, and well, I'm not sure I would have thought of the films they chose for the holidays, but tell us about that.
Sure. So they are contributing shorts, animated shorts, live action shorts to the Winter Film Festival as a part of a day-long experience. So they'll be dealing with themes such as winter landscapes, winter wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, as teens do, take on a little bit more serious side with some kind of more imaginative things. There's some haunting even elements to some of the films that they've chosen, and some that are thought-provoking. So it's a wide array of films that our teens are adding to the lineup.
And a couple of full-length films as well?
Yes, we're going to be screaming. Screening.
We might be screaming.
We might be screaming. Edward Scissorhands and Die Hard in the evening.
Holiday classics. I love
that's
it.
That's right. That's right.
Actually, it might be a welcome break from all the saccharine stuff that's happening in the rest of the world. And one of my all-time favorite events is, and you guys do such an amazing job at this, the Winter Solstice Celebration. Stephanie, tell us about that tree and pronounce the artist's name for us.
So Carl Unish is a Minnesota artist. This is the second year we have his tree, Playtime in Indy, and it is gracing the Lily House lawn, which is a really great juxtaposition to the historic, beautiful estate mixed with this contemporary, brightly colored tree of toys. And 50-foot-tall tree, and they're all plastic children's toys. And we do some really cool things with that throughout the season. At our winter solstice, we will dismantle part of it and donate some of those toys to Mid-North Food Pantry, who is our community partner for the event.
Last year, on the first year you had that, I watched some families stand there and kind of play an I Spy game where it's like, I spy a children's snow saucer, or I spy, you know, whatever the toys were, which is kind of a hoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and one great thing about solstice this year that is new is Santa will be coming.
That's Santa's
right.
coming?
That's
well,
right.
Congratulations on getting it fit into his very packed schedule.
Very much so. We count it an honor to that he would even put us on his calendar. But
you do traditionally have, and I hope you have this year, Arctic animals. Do you have some cold weather animals?
We will have some Arctic wintry friends that will be joining us from Silly Safari, and Jingle John will be with them telling you all about the different types of animals that live in the Arctic region. And you'll have a chance to also pet and take pictures with some of them as well. We'll have an ice carver as well that will be sculpting some surprise for visitors to take photos with.
And people get to go through the Lily House that night as well.
Absolutely. The house is wide open, and we're going to throw open the front doors and let people wander through and take in the beauty of the sort of the house decorated over the top for the holidays. And then if that's not enough, people can wander if they're looking for another place to warm up, sneak over into the greenhouse, the Madeline Elder greenhouse, which is going to be really done up for the holidays like never seen before. So
We talked before we turned the microphones on about the fact that the wreath making workshop sold out in a heartbeat, but you have all kinds of workshops coming up later this winter.
We do. We're so excited. That's one of the things that we were thrilled about, making the shift from shifting the retail out of the greenhouse and moving it up to the front of the museum. You can still come to the museum and be inspired by everything you see in the galleries and in the garden and in the greenhouse. If you want to take an orchid or a plant home with you, you can still do that from up front. But by shifting the greenhouse to beautiful displays and actually taking that old retail space and transforming it, we're in the process of retrofitting it so we can do more workshops, classes. So everything from how to make a holiday centerpiece, Christmas wreaths, repotting orchids, sowing seeds. So this winter there'll be a lot more of those. So we're very excited about that.
Stephanie Perry, Tariq Robinson, and Jonathan Wright. Celebrate the winter holidays at the IMA's Lily House all month, see the film festival on December 17th, and bundle up for the winter solstice on December 22nd. Plan your schedule at imamuseum.org. Well, Jill, so we have lots more events to tell you about on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
What do you have?
We're coming up again, once again, on a First Friday again. And if you haven't been to the Circle City Industrial Complex, this might be the month to do that. That building has been renovated, and it is filling up fast with all kinds of artists and sculptors and photographers and pottery people and a craft beer brewery and a mead production house and all of that kind of good stuff. And on First Friday, it's the IDOTA First Friday Tour. The studios will all be open that night on Friday. And then the next day, of course, is the Downtown Winter Farmers Market is held now at Circle City Industrial Complex, too. So if you want to turn around and come back again the next day, you can, but you will be able to see all different kinds of artists, and they will be in studio with their wares, so you can start your holiday shopping if you haven't already.
Absolutely. I have a couple of First Friday events as well. You can go big with a show called Tiny and give the gift of art this holiday season. It's Tiny 5, a really big show at Gallery 924. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's offices, which include an art gallery at 924 North Pennsylvania.
The art is all 6 by 6 by 6 inches or smaller, with prices ranging from $15 to $500. That's 15, 1, 5. So really affordable art. It's the biggest show of the year, despite its name Tiny, and it has 123 artists and 445 pieces of tiny original artwork. That's one of the advantages of having the dimensions be small, right?
Great space,
indeed.
Too.
Friday, December 2nd from 6 to 9, part of the IDOTA First Friday Art Tour. Also a reminder that the Stutz Holiday Open House is that same night, and they actually go till 10. So if you're making the art gallery circuit,
put that on the end of your list.
Towards the end, exactly.
On Saturday, December the 3rd, the Indiana Youth Group is holding its annual art auction at the Indiana Landmark Center. And they have this once a year to help them raise money. They offer a lot of services and programs for the LGBTQ youth of the community. And more kids are reaching out to them for help and to be involved in their programs. So now more than ever, they need to try to raise money. They're going to have all different kinds of auction items, both silent and a live auction. Interesting different things, including things from The Wizard of Oz.
Ooh.
And an autographed Eddie Money guitar. To the right person, that could be the holiday gift. So that's Saturday, December 3rd, the Indiana Youth Group's annual art auction at the Landmark Center. Learn more about local arts events at the indiearts.org guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's guide. It's at indiearts.org/guide.
Or you can join us again next week for our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. The Kimberlin family of Scott County in southern Indiana sent 33 fathers and sons, brothers and cousins to fight for the Union cause during the Civil War. Members of the family saw action at Vicksburg, fought under Sherman in his march to the sea, survived prison camps such as Andersonville, and lived to tell the tale of the Sultana, America's greatest maritime disaster. Ultimately, the Kimberlins lost 10 family members, a 30% casualty rate that is unequaled in recorded Scott County history. 10 family members were killed, wounded, or died of battlefield disease. The stories of these men and their families have been uncovered in a treasure trove of letters discovered by Michael B. Murphy, whose book, The Kimberlins Go to War, A Union Family in Copperhead Country, was just published by the Indiana Historical Society Press. I invited Mike to tell us about this family, both remarkable and typical of their time and place. So I feel as though we should probably define some terms for people who've maybe slept since their history classes or maybe have never heard what is a copperhead?
Well, Southern sympathizers generally were referred to by two different terms interchangeably. The first is a copperhead, which is essentially the southern snake, the poisonous snake. And the second was a butternut, which was the color of the original Confederate uniforms before everybody kind of agreed that, okay, you be gray and we'll be blue so we don't shoot our own people. And so the copperhead movement is a term that's kind of taken hold throughout history to define anybody who is a southern sympathizer in the northern states. For example, here in Indiana, almost everything south of Marion County was what I would call copperhead country.
I've heard it said before that maybe even a little further north than the southern edge of Marion County, that the Mason-Dixon line, U.S. 40, was a divider for some families.
Absolutely. Most Hoosiers back then and certainly even now have some, as they would say, kin in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
I live on the south side of Indianapolis, and all my friends and neighbors, you know, you talk to them. They talk proudly about how their families came through the Cumberland Gap from Virginia and North Carolina, migrated through Kentucky, and eventually got up here to Indiana. And so there's a significant blood connection to Kentucky among Hoosiers.
Tell us about the Kimberlins. How did you discover them? How did you discover the treasure trove of letters?
Well, actually, it's interesting. The Kimberlins are the ancestors of my former wife. And her sister is the DAR historian for Fayette County, Kentucky, which is Lexington, Kentucky. And she told me about going to a family reunion in Scott County where she met a high school teacher named Thelma Hoag, who told her that she had some family letters dating back to the Civil War. Well, Thelma, who's still alive and very active at the age of 89, would allow my sister-in-law to take one letter at a time to the local Kinko's store and copy it and bring it back.
Wow.
She didn't want them out of her control.
I don't blame her.
And over time, I realized that there were more than three or four guys from the family who had fought in the Union or for the Union in the Civil War. It was actually 33 members of the family that went and fought. And I was introduced to Thelma, and slowly we formed a trusting relationship. And I would actually go to her house on Sundays, and she's very good at reading this old Victorian-style handwriting. And she would read the letters to me. I would sit on my laptop and transcribe them, and then I would scan them into my scanning machine. And she literally kept the letters under her bed and since has moved them to file cabinets in her laundry room.
Oh, fireproof, please.
But she is very, very proud of them. She is a very sharp historian in her own right, and she knows the Kimberlin family history forwards and backwards. In fact, some of the letters date back as far as the 1770s with original envelopes and postage.
Wow.
and the whole thing. And they are very compelling letters. And from an academic standpoint or a historian standpoint, these letters have never been exposed to academia or to the public at large until this book.
How many are there?
There's dozens. Yeah. There's dozens. And I didn't use all of them because some of them were not relevant to the story. Some
sure.
of them talk about going off to California to look for gold in the 1840s or moving to Kansas and then returning and those kinds of things. So I focused on the letters surrounding the Civil War, letters from the battlefield. But even more rare are a couple letters to the battlefield.
I wondered if there were any in there that
there's a couple.
Both sides of the conversation.
There's a couple. And they just add a level of humanity to the story of Southern Indiana's involvement in the Civil War that you can't otherwise get. And again, these are unique and never been exposed before. You know, they were farmers. They wrote letters back from the Civil War saying, you know, I found these great whippoorwill peas, you know, and I've included some seeds in the envelope to see if they'll work in Scott County. And or I found these musculine grapes, or whatever the case may be. So there's a lot of really human interaction. A lot of talking about, you know, how are those pretty girls back in old Scott doing? You tell them when I get back, we're going dancing, and those kind of things. And one of the funniest letters is toward the end of the war. Most of the Kimberlins fought in either the 23rd Indiana or the 66th, which were both organized in Scott and Clark counties. And so toward the end of the war, they're actually in North Carolina, and they were in camp right near the 22nd Indiana. And when they found out that essentially the Confederacy was starting to surrender, the 22nd Indiana came over to the 23rd's camp dressed as women, and they all danced together. Now, you can imagine these burly Civil War soldiers, but I'm sure there was some alcohol involved.
Oh, sure. But what a joyous, fun,
yeah, to
fun
know that the,
human
yeah,
story.
To know that the war was over. So the Kimberlins were very, very patriotic, and that's what brought me to write the story.
And I get the sense that many of them joined up because the patriarch joined up or the uncle that they looked up to joined up.
Well, there were actually five brothers and cousins who in July of 1861 literally marched down the road from Lexington, Indiana, which was then the county seat of Scott County, off to New Albany. And the sad irony is that none of those five ever came back.
Hmm.
All five of them died in battle or of illness. And there are letters from Kimberlins, for example, Jacob J. was fighting at Vicksburg, and he said in a letter, I was wounded in Port Gibson. I recovered from that, and now I've been shot through the hips going for water, you know, for the unit. But don't worry, I'm in a hospital near Memphis. I'm going to be okay. And then 3 weeks later, you get a letter from his cousin that says, I hate to tell you, Jacob J. died, and I'll be escorting his body home in a few weeks. In fact, just last week, Sharon, I went with Thelma, and we went to the Green Lawn Cemetery in Greenville, Indiana, and this is the first time I've seen Jacob Jay's grave. And it was the grave that was put together by a very, very proud father, because on the back of the grave, he was a private, he was not a big deal, but on the back of his gravestone are etched every battle that Jacob Jay fought in. Oh. And he's right next to his father and his stepmother and a couple of his other other siblings. And so,
you know, part of what struck me reading this book is how normal and maybe typical this family is of their time, but of any time. They're proud of one another. They have some squabbles. They try to do better than each other in whatever business they're in, whether they're working in a dry goods, you know, they've founded a dry mm-hmm. goods store, or they're trying to do better with their farm. And they're dealing with some of the same problems we're still dealing with. Immigration was a big issue in this era and in
immigration,
this place.
The Irish and the Germans, you know, we talk a lot in the book. We kind of trace the political tradition of Scott County and how the Irish and German immigrants were really coveted by the Democrats. And so at one point in Indiana, you did not have to be a U.S. citizen to vote because the Democrats wanted the Irish and the German immigrants to be able to vote for them.
Mike Murphy's book, The Kimberlins Go to War, A Union Family in Copperhead Country, is newly published by the Indiana Historical Society Press, and you can find it on Amazon and at bookstores everywhere. You can meet Mike at the IHS's Holiday Author Fair this coming Saturday, December 3rd, from noon to 4 p.m. at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center. Up next, a cultural manifesto's Kyle Long talks mumble rap, writing, and redemption with Pope Adrian Bless.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and I'm joined in the studio today by one of the greatest rappers in the world, Pope Adrian Bless.
Try something, I'm a stroke. My grandmother, I made it. Granny, I made it.
Pope has five songs to share with the listeners of Indianapolis today.
Yes.
Pope, what do you got up first for us?
Heart Hope by O Wonder. Very phenomenal record. Heart Hope is one of those records where it's like, well, matter of fact, O Wonder is a person, it's a duo. They make the most beautiful music. It's so simplistic. The voice is like, it's just there. And it's a very encouraging record, you know what I mean? Like, you listen to the lyrics, it's very powerful, and it's not over the top. It's the best type of piece artistically you can think of.
That building's high, is it high enough to see the clouds? Yet it don't bother me. The elevator's working overtime, up and down, yet it don't bother me. Cause I need something more than everything, a higher self deep within. Cause I need something more than everything, a higher self. And I know we need a little hard hope.
Love it. Love them. Actually, the first few records I'm probably going to say are O Wonder related because their catalog is great. They just have a great catalog.
What's your second song for us?
Plans by O Wonder.
Another one.
Plans is so dope. I love it to death. It's just, they care. It's one of them records where it's like, hey, I care. I miss you. I love you. But I'm working very, very hard. And everything I'm doing is for you at the end of the day. And that's for my daughter at the end of the day. That's one of them records that I cannot stop listening to consistently.
I made a home in a basement. Didn't think that I need the light. Cause all these plans I've been making get me out of here in time. But it's always two steps backwards. Too much gravity to feel the highs. And all these plans I've been chasing are getting caught up and wasted. I don't know where the money goes. I get broke as the city glows. Shines bright as I sink down low. But I've got plans to get to you. You know, don't you know? Gonna build a paper plane to float to you. You know, don't you know? We'll be scraping the skies with our fingertips, screaming, this is the life we were born for this. See, I've got plans to get to you. You know, don't you know?
Song number three is da 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 da. Wait for it, wait for it. Underground Rap Lord by Diop is one of my favorite records.
Oh yeah, Diop, a great artist from here in
Indianapolis. Great, man, because it's that flow flexing thing, man. That lingo talk is incredible. I love it, man. And he is ingrained as an Underground Rap Lord because of it. I'm like, yeah, you got it. You got it. It's your world, man.
Flexing on them on a daily, then it's like they just paid me, the rising you haters to hate me, automatic my flow so wavy, 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 tsunami, Mike Tyson, body blow, tiger eye, yeah, I have arrived, bottom line, my PM-ship is pimps, platinum rhymes jumping off my lips, can't nobody else even offer this, 187, this coffee, this shit, you ain't living what you saying.
Number four,
Kevin Gates.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Just thinking about it is hilarious, okay? Kevin, anything Kevin Gates has put out.
Do you think I'll ever need you love more than you need me? Show me your true colors, girl. I just want to see. Cause I done had too many come around and change on me. She's screaming, please don't waste my time. I say I totally agree.
See, girl, I'm fine with that. I done gave my watches away. Ain't got no time for that.
I love seeing street dudes make really great music. That shows that it doesn't really matter where you come from. Art is art, and it can be discovered in any way and showcased in any way.
Fifth and final song with Pope Adrian Lewis.
And final record. Way Down We Go by Khalil. I love those records, dude, that are intended to strike you in the feel. Like, you're, yes, I'm saying a lot, but this is boom, right in there.
And way down we go, go.
Guest has been Pope Adrian Bless, an important and highly respected member of the Indianapolis music community.
I am so honored.
You have a new EP out titled Suicide Radio.
Yes, sir.
And folks can go to PopeAdrianBless.com to check out that EP. Thanks for the music. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for you, man.
Kyle Long with Pope Adrian Bless. Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7 and Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI.org for our podcast. Tune in next week when we'll meet a composer of modern song cycles, check out One Theater with both naughty and nice holiday shows, and learn about a new web TV series set in Fountain Square. And, of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.